Hello, my sweet little lovey-dovey baby boys and girls out there. It is I, Duncan Trussell. You are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I cannot stop watching the news right now. It's horrible. I'm getting in Twitter fights with people because I'm saying you shouldn't kill kids. And this, they think that I'm saying that this means that I'm pro-Palestine and against Israel. Which is pretty fucked up, because I just think in general, 100% of the time, you should have a don't kill kids policy in your life. That should just be something that you, a basic sort of rule that you follow no matter what. No matter what. Just don't kill kids. Like when you're on this planet and you're wandering around and doing whatever it is that you do, whether that's you're a janitor or you work at a McDonald's or you run a country, you should make it a rule for yourself and everyone you know that you don't kill kids with bombs, that you don't explode them, turn them into hamburger meat, that you don't drop white phosphorus on them, igniting them, and if not igniting them, then causing them to later get cancer from the depleted uranium in the shit that you're dropping. You just don't do that. Like when you're planning your day out, make sure that if on that list you've written drop depleted uranium on a city where there are children that might get burnt to death, just mark that off the list and then do everything else. But just don't kill kids. It's for some people, it seems like it's hard to not kill kids. For example, if you're a Ukrainian Russian separatist who has access to a highly advanced missile system, then for you, I guess, it was hard to not kill kids because you had to put in the code or squeeze the trigger or do whatever you did that activated the missile that went flying into the sky and blew up an airplane, thus killing a bunch of kids. You, whoever did that out there, were not successful in avoiding killing kids in your life. So for the rest of your life, you're a child murderer. You get to go around thinking about the fact that you blew an entire airplane out of the sky and caused human beings to rain down on the ground. And of those human beings raining down on the ground, some of them were kids. You're a child murderer. If you are somebody who is in Hamas, the Palestinian anti-Israel militant organization, and you have convince someone you know to strap bombs to their body and they've gone to a cafe and blown up a bunch of kids, well, you're a child murderer. If you are in Hamas and you've pressed a button on your missile launcher and the missile launcher has flown into a city and blown up kids, then you've killed kids. You're a child murderer. For the rest of your life, you get to be a person who killed kids. If you are the president of Israel or in the military in Israel or a soldier in Israel and you pressed a button that made a bomb land on a city and killed kids, then you are a child murderer. It doesn't matter what the geography is that you live in. No matter what, if you kill kids, you are a child murderer, and being a child murderer is the worst thing you can be in this incarnation. There's a lot of shitty things you could be. You could be somebody who raps to folk guitar riffs. I would rather live on an island with 50 rapping folk guitar artists than one child murderer. Because the folk guitar artists, it's gonna suck when they sit on the beach and do their glib rhymes talking about how great sunscreen smells when they're rubbing it into their girlfriend's back. But at least you're not going to have to constantly think in the back of your mind, holy shit, this psychopath thought something was worth killing kids. I don't want to be in a car with a child murderer. I don't want to be at a party with a child murderer. I don't want to be in a bathroom sitting, taking a dump in a stall next to a child murderer. And I sure as fuck don't want to listen to anything a child murderer has to say when he's explaining why he had to kill kids.
I mean, sometimes it is interesting to listen to serial killers
rationalize or explain why they killed kids. Here's an example. Listen to this. This is an interview with serial killer Joseph Paul Franklin. This was a white supremacist serial killer, and this is him explaining why he killed some kids.
Do you think about those two boys in Cincinnati?
No, I don't really think about them. I mean, I can't go back and think about the cases, you know, individually. I have too much other problems, too much other things I have to focus on and worry about, you know.
Those are two young boys, just 13 and 14 years old.
Yeah, it was just, you know, I regret the fact that I shot them now.
Why did you shoot them?
Well, I was just waiting. I was sitting on that railroad track waiting for the first either interracial couple or black to walk by.
And what was your mission?
Well, to try to get a race war started, mixed race couples and blacks. I figured that once I started doing it and showed them how, other white supremacists would do the same thing, follow suit. You know,
so you hope people would copy you?
I would hope, yeah, I hope that other white nationalists would do the same thing.
Do you think you're a hero to those hate groups?
Well, that's what they tell me, you know. I just felt like I was at war, you know, and it was the survival of the white race was at stake, stuff like that, you know.
Do you feel that way now?
No, not at all. No, I can see now I was wrong. It's wrong. Violence is wrong at any time, you know.
Do you feel that way because you got caught?
No, not at all, no. As a matter of fact, it took me many, many years to change. I actually thought, as misguided as I was doing the will of God. You know, I thought I was...
So what you're hearing there is a serial killer who has an awesome accent, Texas accent, always cool, and... he's realized violence is always wrong. This is a racist serial killer who, prior to his death, seemingly has finally grokked that you shouldn't kill people, especially kids. Now, here's a chilling interview with someone who has also killed a bunch of kids, only the way he kills the kids is using an army and high-tech drones to do it, whereas this serial killer and most serial killers, Joseph Paul Franklin, he just used a simple gun on the railroad tracks. Here's another serial killer. This guy is using an army, government, and high-tech military weapons to kill kids. Let's listen to him.
Nevertheless, it is a hard fact that U.S. strikes have resulted in civilian casualties. A risk that exists in every war. And for the families of those civilians, no words or legal construct can justify their loss. For me and those in my chain of command, those deaths will haunt us.
The language of war is so creepy. It's way creepier than the serial killer we just listened to, just because the serial killer is like, yeah, I shot a couple of kids. Obama can't say, well, me and people in my chain of command accidentally killed kids. He calls them civilian casualties. But one thing he has in common with the serial killer is he feels bad about killing the kids. The difference is Obama hasn't figured out yet that violence is always wrong. Somehow in his brilliant presidential brain, the neurons haven't connected or fired yet that make it so that he is incapable of killing kids. But you don't have to be like that. You don't have to be like a serial killer. You can be like someone who doesn't kill kids. And if you find yourself standing on some battlefield and you look down and you see a weapon in your hand, just drop the weapon. Put your hands behind your back or your head. And when whoever you're working for is trying to get you to kill people walks up to you and says, hey, I need you to squeeze the trigger that's going to launch white phosphorus into a city, or I need you to remote control this drone that's going to blow up Bedouins who are sleeping in their tents, all you have to do is pick up your guitar, look them in the eye, and say, No, I don't kill kids. I don't care what their parents did. I'm not gonna turn them into hamburger meat. I'm not gonna blow them up in the street. I'm not gonna burn their baby feet with shrapnel shards and chemical heat.
Hey everybody, it's me, the Teacup Pig, and I'm gonna lay down some rhymes. Yeah. Yo. Baby blood off of our hands, 'cause no, we don't kill kids. We don't kill kids.
All right, sweet children of this beautiful planet Earth, I've got some big announcements for you. I know I've already talked about it a little bit, but all of my upcoming tour dates are located at DuncanTrussell.com, and I really hope you'll come out and see either a live Duncan Trussell Family Hour or me performing stand-up. These are all happening. Starting on the 21st of next month, I'm going to be at the Laughing Skull in Atlanta. Then I'm going to be in Chattanooga. I'm going to be in Nashville. I'm going to be in Asheville. I'm going to be in Charleston. I'm going to be in Durham. I'm going to be in, and then in September, at the end of the month, I'm going to be in San Francisco doing a live DTFH. Portland doing a live DTFH, Seattle doing a live DTFH, Vancouver at the Northwest Podcast Festival doing a live Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and I'm going to be in Calgary doing stand-up. So please come out and see me. All the dates are located on my website at DuncanTrussell.com, and the August shows, I'm going around with Johnny Pemberton. If you haven't seen him do stand-up, you absolutely must. He is so funny and creative and awesome, and I'm really looking forward to spending a week traveling around the East Coast with him. This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by
Nature Box!
Nature Box is a wonderful company that will deliver healthy, organic, non-chemically soaked snacks to your door on a monthly basis. And if you're somebody like me who enjoys smoking marijuana and gets the munchies and does not discriminate and will eat whatever food is lying around, Nature Box is a godsend. Nature Box will help you fight your personal battle against moobs, man boobs, or what Steve Agee on the Sarah Silverman program called pot tits. You want to have healthy snacks around your house. That's the idea. Nature Box, it's like suddenly your grandmother has started sending you delicious, home-cooked, healthy snacks. No potassium glutenate, no Fukushima outflow soaked into your delicious snacks. These are good, healthy, delicious snacks that aren't going to have weird, unknown effects on your body. They're not going to make your asshole seal up. It's good food. I tried it out. I don't promote anything on this podcast that I haven't tried out. They sent me a Nature Box, and I will admit that I ate the entire Nature Box in a couple of days, and they sent me a big one. So that's bad. You still have to apply discipline. It doesn't matter if an angel flew down with a golden platter filled with a meal whipped up by Jesus. If you eat too much of it, you're gonna get moobs. So you have to have discipline, and I guess one cool thing about Nature Box is it's so delicious that you actually do have to control your intake of their super healthy food. There's no need for you to be eating stuff that is flavored with Fukushima water. Nature Box has gluten-free, non-GMO snack choices for you. So when you're eating this stuff, you don't have to wonder if in a few years your nipples are going to fall off. They've got great selections. You can pick PB&J granola, pistachio, power clusters, baked sweet potato fries, South Pacific plantain chips, and over 100 other snack options for you. Zero trans fat, zero high fructose corn syrup, nothing artificial. They ship it right to your door. And if you go to naturebox.com/familyhour and order, you'll get 50% off your first box. And do it. I did it. I loved it. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it as soon as I finish recording this intro. I swear to God, it's that good. Like I said, I don't sponsor or promote anything. I don't promote anything on this podcast that I don't actually use. And there really is nothing better when you're stoned than having the UPS guy deliver to you a giant box filled with delicious food that is not going to cause strange chemicals to go into your boobs and expand them. The dream is to one day go to a swimming pool and not feel weird when you take your shirt off. Let NatureBox be part of that. If nothing else, you can pig out on it and pretend that you're... At least you won't have to worry about sucking back evil chemicals. You can binge on healthy food. If you're going to binge, binge on healthy food. Support these guys. They're supporting this podcast. Great company. Do please go to naturebox.com/familyhour. 50% off your first box. That's a really good deal. Go give it a try. Hare Krishna. We're also brought to you, as always, by Amazon.com. The next time you're going to buy something from Amazon, just go through the portal located at DuncanTrussell.com. Doesn't cost you anything, and they give us a very small percentage. And for all of you who have been doing that and have bookmarked it, thank you so much. It really is a cool way for you to support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. You can also go to our shop. We have a brand new shirt design created by the brilliant Ron Rigi. There's a lot of other cool shirts there. Please go check it out. Buy a DTFH Ron Rigi Enneagram t-shirt. It will ward off the evil eye and surround you with a bubble of pure love energy, which will hopefully bring into your life a sweet darling whose hair you can comb in the bathtub. I can't guarantee it, but I pray that it happens. All right, you guys, we have an incredible episode for you today. Today's guest is Reverend Kyle. He is a virtual reality evangelist, an expert on virtual reality and Android, and he really blew my mind in this interview by helping me understand just how quickly this new technology of virtual reality is evolving and expanding, and how we're just a few short years away from existing in a universe where we will be able to stick our heads and bodies into these strange digital portals that allow us to experience anything that we want to. You can go to his website to find out more about him. He is at reverendkyle.com. He's got a great podcast. I will have links to all of this up at duncantrussell.com. Thank you all so much for listening to this podcast. My apologies for the two-week hiatus. We are back. I've got 5 podcasts in the can, great podcasts, including an interview with Lucian Greaves, who is from the Temple of Satan. He's the brilliant theologian who is having a theologian and Satanist who's having a Baphomet statue placed next to the Ten Commandments in Oklahoma. And he's a really cool guy. Also, we've got podcasts coming up with Matt Dwyer, Raghu Marcus and David Silver, Honey Honey, and many, many more. I love you guys. I hope you're having a great week. Don't let the news get you too freaked out. Everything gets better eventually, and I'm sure that soon all of this is going to transform into the most beautiful possible outcome. Let's pray for that. Okay? Hare Krishna. Now, everybody, open your third eyes and send as much love as you can to whatever digital sector of the universe Reverend Kyle happens to be hanging out at right now. Please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Reverend Kyle.
Yeah.
Reverend Kyle, Hare Krishna, welcome to the Dr. Trussell Family Hour podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Are you kidding, man? Thank you for coming on the show. You are one of the preeminent scholars and mystics when it comes to the strange world of virtual reality. So I'm really excited to talk to you about all the stuff that's going on right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fun conversation.
Why? Now, let me just start off with a question I think everyone's wondering is, are you an actual reverend?
I am indeed ordained as a minister in the great state of Ohio. And it's not my day job, but it's what I do on the side. Whip a little religion on people when they least expect it. But yeah, it's I've actually performed several marriages and, you know, done the whole minister thing. The Reverend Kyle became my online persona when I was back when I was doing YouTube videos with Android tutorials. And I was Reverend Kyle, the minister of mobile devices. And once I stopped doing the Android thing, I moved into the VR world, and the name just came with me.
What religion are you a minister of?
All and none at the same time. So I was raised Catholic, but I guess it's everything but that at this point.
So you're multi-denominational.
Exactly. All are welcome in the church of Reverend Kyle.
There is it seems that there really is a kind of religious component to the groundswell of virtual reality enthusiasts that's happening right now.
It can be very spiritual. A lot of people take it to an extreme level, and it really, I think it's a great thing to expand and think about it in that terms.
Well, it's a, when you go to these events, and I've only been to a couple, which was the one that we met at. What was right. The name of that party?
That was the Los Angeles VR Mixer. It was during E3.
And at the Los Angeles VR Mixer, there's a feeling in the air that is a tangible sense that these people have that this thing that's about to emerge into the mainstream is so very powerful and so very weird that it seems to be mystical in nature.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we even discuss when we talk about VR to other folks who are not aware of it or its implications to the future, we call it evangelizing. We are evangelizing virtual reality to the consumer masses. And it really is. There is this kind of cult following behind it right now, and it's what's pushing it forward.
You see at these events such strange technologies. The aesthetics of the thing are so odd, and in some ways, some of the aesthetics are kind of horrifying to some people, but they're also, it's just a fascinating thing to be in a room where you see people with these black boxes strapped to their faces. People, at one point, I remember someone walking through the room holding a staff that had multiple cameras attached to it that was recording the event in 3D space. So you have wander, you know, it's just like it's some strange priest wandering through a church with a staff or a wizard or something with these devices that are encoding or digitizing reality. And then, you know, every single one of these at this party, every demo is essentially a portal into a virtual reality. So you have these people who are in control of these dimensional portals, and because of all of this, the combined feeling is definitely one of being at some kind of church or temple, or I don't know, it feels as though you're at a pagan gathering.
Oh yeah, and some of the people are really enthusiastic about it, to the point where it is, you know, if somebody says something bad about VR, it's like time to go on a crusade and convert these folks. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of parallelisms between religion and VR. And you're right. You know, you look at this group of people coming together to worship at the altar of VR, and we were all disciples there, just looking at this idol and just praising it. And you know, you do kind of have this weird Orwellian type of atmosphere, folks walking around with black boxes on their heads, looking at things, grasping out into the air, speaking in tongues. I mean, it's everything and anything at this point.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the idol that you're worshiping has not fully emerged into this dimension yet. So there's the quality of, you know, these VR evangelists are all prophets who are proclaiming the birth of this digital messiah or this digital utopia that is, its tendrils are just beginning to poke into this dimension. And the very tips of the tendrils, that's all we're seeing right now. And the tips of those tendrils are the black boxes on people's heads and the variety of new technology that's been assembled by people who are just inspired by a feeling, more than anything. You know, the guys who started Oculus Rift, they started basically in a basement. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were just a college kid, and he was working in his basement trying to create the future, and he couldn't find something. Palmer Luckey was looking for an answer. He was searching for this digital coming, the next age, and he couldn't find it. And he went on a pilgrimage and came back empty. And when he finally decided, I am going to be the one to create this future, and from there he acquired other people to help him, and now we have them up on a pedestal as, you know, the VR, the coming of the future.
He felt it. He knew that there was this potential to no longer exist in this reality because of the various advancements that were happening and from, you know, accelerated computing power to motion sensing technology to, I don't know, what do you call the thing that's actually in the Rift that now detects when you lean forward? What is that called?
Well, the positional tracking is done by cameras and sensors and IMUs, all sorts of fun technology working together.
And these technologies are essentially brand new.
Well, a lot of it already existed. It just didn't exist in the capacity. You know, sometimes there are technologies out there and people don't realize their full capabilities, what they are, what's possible with these technologies. And it takes someone like Palmer to put them together in a room and say, okay, I'm going to put them in my cauldron and stir them, and I'm going to concoct a new type of technology out of these things, a hybrid, a new thing that's going to come out, and it's going to give us something just completely out of the ordinary.
That's, again, you know, you use the term cauldron, and I think it's a perfect way to describe it. It's this kind of alchemical assemblage. You're taking all these multiple technologies, sort of positioning them together in a way that literally opens up a fucking portal. It opens up a portal to an alternate dimension. And people, you know, I don't think people quite understand, you understand it, I understand it, but people who haven't experienced the newest Oculus Rift, they don't understand what is right around the corner. They don't know that this Palmer Luckey fellow and you and all the enthusiasts, evangelists, and technicians out there who are making this happen have given human beings the ability for the first time in human history, without the use of some kind of potent psychedelic or being hypnotized, to stick your head in a hole in the universe and look around in some brand new place born inside of someone's imagination.
One of the nice things, one of the fun things about what I do, evangelizing VR to the masses, is that there will be times I will take it out to a group of people, a gathering, maybe a party or something, and I'll have somebody come in. I'll say, here, put this on your head. And they'll look at me skeptically, and they'll say, what is this? And I said, it's the future, sir. Put it on your head. And they'll still kind of look at you weird, like, why am I doing this? Once they take it off of their head, after they have had this first experience in VR, their reaction is just priceless. I need to start taking a camera and taking a picture after they take it off their head each time. We've all seen the videos on YouTube, and we've all, you know, heard people's reactions to this. But you are right. The majority of the world, the sleeping masses out there right now have no clue what the future is going to be. They have no clue that in, you know, a year to 18 months, this is a technical renaissance, a digital revolution that's about to hit us. And the majority of the world has no idea what's coming.
And that's thrilling. That is thrilling. You know, I don't know if you, have you ever taken LSD?
No.
Well, you should. It's a wonderful drug. And when you, if you're someone who's like taken LSD, the first time you experience, you can become an acid evangelist, because when you take this drug, you experience this heightening of consciousness, emerging into the universe, and a myriad of other beautiful things can happen to you depending on the size of the dose and who you're around. And when you take it, you and your life becomes completely shifted in the direction of what I would consider a kind of spiritual awakening. So many people's spiritual paths have started with a nice dose of some psychedelic. When you are around someone who takes it for the first time, and you get to watch this transformation happen to them, and see them wake up to the incredible and sensual and mystical world that LSD offers a person, or any good psychedelic, there is such a rush in that. It's a very similar rush when you introduce people to this, because it's like going into a room where someone has been, I don't know, in a wheelchair for their entire lives, and giving them a hope that they're actually going to walk. Only the hope that virtual reality offers us is not that we're going to be able to walk, it's that we're going to be able to fly. It's that we're finally going to be able to experience flight, and that we're finally going to experience every single mystical and incredible thing that happens to superheroes and to all the fantasy beings that we've seen in movies since we were growing up. Your mind, some part of your mind, will grok that you, because of this technology, are eventually going to be able to walk through walls in a virtual world. And man, it's so cool to watch whatever that thing has happened to people.
One really fun experience in virtual reality, it's a very popular video game called Minecraft. And with VR, the Oculus Rift and Minecraft is a very good combination, because the worlds are so just fluid. You can change them. You can manipulate them. And it's almost surreal to think that I can look over here and push a button and a block appears that didn't appear before. And it's gotten to the point where we have these towers that are, you know, relatively speaking, thousands of feet in the air. And you can stand up on top of these towers and look down and know that all I have to do is take a step forward. And even though it's not real, even though it's in the virtual world, you still hesitate. And then you take the step and you're plummeting to what would be your death normally. Yeah. But then you just land and you move about your business. And it's just something you have to experience to appreciate.
And no one's got you, no one in the history of our species has gotten to experience that without turning into fucking jelly. And I can't emphasize that enough, that this is, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there are mystical shamans who can fly and walk through walls and alter the laws of physics using their mind. I've heard that these people exist, but I'm betting that this is the very first time we've had access to this kind of, this level of sense gratification. And there's no telling what the implications are. And I love that you call it, that you're totally, that you call yourself a VR evangelist. And because that shows that you recognize that there is, you do recognize that this is the birth of probably a new religion. It probably is a religion. We're seeing maybe the second coming or something. It might be like the second coming of Christ.
I don't know. It's really an interesting story. When I first started with the VR, a friend of mine, a colleague, had said, "Hey, have you seen this Oculus Rift?" And I hadn't at the time. And when I saw it, a button, a switch, a trigger in my mind just flipped and said, "This is what you need to do." And on a regular basis, when I would bring it up with people, they would look at me like I had no idea what I was talking. They had no idea, no concept of how this could possibly work. And that's when I started doing my own podcast, the Rev VR podcast. I knew that there was this void that needed to be filled. I knew that there had to be a way to reach out to the masses through the digital world, the internet, and say, "Listen, folks, you've got to see what this is. You've got to come and follow us into the future. Because if you don't, you'll be sitting on your couch watching Honey Boo Boo, and the rest of the world is experiencing cosmic everything."
Cosmic everything. That's it. It's not games. That's a really important point. It's not games. It's not just games. A lot of people think that. It's just games. It's going to let people play Call of Duty as though it were real. And that's, of course, that's definitely going to happen. But that's just the very beginning. Where do you see, what in 2 years, describe to me what society is going to look like once VR has initially emerged into it.
The easiest way to answer that is a conversation that I had with a colleague at work who is very much in the know in terms of technology. And he said to me, he asked this question, he said, "What are they going to be able to do with virtual reality?" And my answer to him was, "Yes." And he said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Yes." He's like, "Well, yes what? Yes everything. What do you want to do? Because in 2 years, you're going to be able to do it everywhere all the time. I am a bespectacled person. I wear glasses on a daily basis. And if I am walking down the street 2 years from now and I decide that I want to flip into a digital world, a button on the side of my glasses will allow me to do that. If I want to sit at a bus stop and instead be sitting on a park bench in Paris, talking to a beautiful young French girl, eating a baguette, I can do so."
You think that's 2 years?
I don't see why not. I don't see why not. I like to be optimistic about it. Maybe 3, definitely 5. But I have a feeling in 2 years, we're going to see advancements in this technology. Because what will happen is the rest of the world will suddenly get it. Next year, at this time, the rest of the world will suddenly click and they'll go, "Oh, wow, we need to focus our attention on this." And then everybody will start putting a large emphasis and a lot of manpower into making this be better than it already is. And as a result of that, we will reap the fruits of those labors. And 2, maybe 3 years, I'll be talking to that French girl.
Wow. And it's going to be an AI, you know, I hope it's a real French girl who's got glasses on at her bus stop, but it might be an AI French girl, because what's growing along with this technology, side by side with this technology, is artificial intelligence is becoming increasingly advanced. You know, the story that hit the internet recently was the Wikipedia robot that's, I don't know, did you see that? The Wikipedia robot?
The computer that passed the Turing test. And so the Turing test says, "Are you human?" And a computer has finally passed that test. And what that means from an AI perspective is that a year from now, 2 years from now, you are not going to have any idea if somebody on the internet is real or fake.
Now, combine that with the giving an AI the ability to manufacture virtual worlds. And now what you have is artificial intelligence becoming the architects of virtual landscapes that human beings can experience using VR goggles.
And now suddenly you start taking me down a very narrow road into our possible dystopian future.
You think that's dystopian?
Well, it could be. I think that that's the fear. Unfortunately, Hollywood has not portrayed VR and artificial intelligence in the best of lights. And as a result of that, we have a lot of folks who are very, very afraid of innovation and technology. And if suddenly our virtual worlds are being controlled by our virtual people, then who's to say that we ever end up coming out of it at all? And the machines take over and we scorch the skies and it's all very Matrix-y.
Well, that's where you get into the idea that that already happened an infinite amount of time ago, and that we are inside the thing.
Wow, yeah. And then that means that here we are designing it yet again. Maybe that's the portal on the way out. Or maybe we'll go in and we'll come out the other side where we should have been.
Well, yeah, or maybe it's just a kind of infinite recursion. Would that be a recursion? It's like an infinite...
Sure.
Yeah, so that's what it is. It's just kind of like, you take, what is it? I was just reading about, I was giving numerology, and I can't remember you. You take pi, and you have this infinite string of numbers that just goes on and on and on and on and on. And maybe it's some function of what we are, or this dimension that we're in, is what it does is it just keeps reproducing itself. That's just it. It just replicates itself again and again and again, and goes in certain civilizations get to experience the birth of it. That's the most incredible thing, to exist pre-VR and then after VR. We get to exist. We're on the border here, and it's such a beautiful thing, because the next generation, it's going to be they won't blink at the novelty of being able to travel into alternate universes anytime they want, to sit on park benches and be in Paris, France, or to sit on fucking park benches and be on Mercury.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I have children of all different ages, and I am envious of their generation, because they're going to see this taken. I mean, we talked about 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. Imagine 25 years from now, my children will be in the prime of their lives and experiencing something that I can only dream of right now.
Well, reminds me of a conversation I had at the GF 2045, which is that conference Dmitry Itchkov threw with,
right.
And it was with a geneticist working on life extension technology. And we asked him 10 years from now, what's that going to look like? And he said, that's a long time. That's a long time. Let's talk 5 years from now. Let's talk 4 years from now. And what he was well aware of is just this acceleration that we are seeing happen right now. There was a great thing that popped up on Reddit today, which is this month in technology. Did you see that?
I did not. No.
Oh my God. It's like 10 things that happened just this month, or that came, that people became aware of this month. People have been working on them for years, but one of them was the Wikipedia robot that's printing, tens of thousands of Wikipedia articles that look like they were done by a human. The other one was the Google contact lenses that are going to be able to measure your blood glucose levels. And then the most fascinating one to me was a new way to do brain scans of human brains that will allow us to have an entire map of the human brain within, I think it's like a month of scanning a human brain, and that would have normally taken years to get the kind of detail that this scanning technology is going to allow us. And of course, being able to scan the human brain in great precise detail is one of the prerequisites to being able to digitize a human brain and theoretically summon up a kind of true digital consciousness, you know? And that happened this month. So 25 years from now, I think it would be impossible to imagine what kind of universe that we're going to be living in.
The human brain struggles to predict beyond a linear motion. So we can predict where we will be based on the current trend, the current line that we're on. What happens, though, and it's always happened to us all throughout history, and it will happen in the future, is that there are these forks, these branches, these disruptions in the line that suddenly skew us off into a tangent possible future. And that is where we struggle. As humans, we struggle with the ability to see that far ahead. And so I understand the limit it to 5 years, because I think anything beyond that, it's almost like just reading science fiction.
Yeah, yes, this conversation reminds me of a conversation in a science fiction book I would have read 10 years ago. And because, you know, it's important to understand, I see VR as being one of the limbs of this new being that's emerging into our dimension. It's one of the limbs, and I think the being has the many limbs. The artificial intelligence is another of the limbs of the creature. And another of the limbs of the creature is life extension technologies. And this is something that this, I wish I could remember his name, the geneticist was telling us that currently the human lifespan every year increases by half a year. And their goal is to make it so every year the human lifespan increases by a year. You do that and you've got immortality. That's human immortality. It doesn't mean that if you get shot, you're going to survive, but it does mean that if every year we live a year longer, then you're going to live for as long as you want to live. And so here we have these three limbs of this and then the other limb, of course, is 3D printers. And so here you have basically these components are there to extend our lifespan so that we can witness the incredible things that are past our ability to predict. But then also, you have, with 3D printers, that is what's going to make it so that we don't just go into the realities, but they can come out in here. 3D printers are portals into this universe. And if you combine that with artificial intelligence, so the artificial intelligence can start 3D printing androids and assigning them, you know, virtual personalities, then suddenly this liminal state between what isn't and what is, which contains all the potentiality of the infinite number of artificial intelligence beings that could exist in the universe, that begins to pour out into this dimension.
Wow, yeah. And then you can take it even one step further into the absurd and say, what if I can digitize my brain and now put it into one of these 3D printed androids? I could be both real and manufactured at the same time.
Absolutely. And then you just take that 3D printed android and you put it in your 3D printed mini rocket ship and you blast that thing to Mars. And now you're a fucking colonist or some version of you that you replicated. And man, this it sounds crazy, but it's not that far off. Even if it's 50 years away that you can do that sort of thing. That's what's wild to me is that, you know, I don't know about like, I know that where 3D printers are right now is essentially it looks like they're already capable of printing out some incredibly detailed figurines and stuff, but I don't know where they're at as far as like printing circuit boards and stuff like that. But
so I was at a store the other day that had a 3D printer, and there was sitting in front of it several examples of things that had been 3D printed, and one of them was a bottle, just a bottle. But it had a lid, and it fit perfectly. And I said, oh, here it comes. Here it is. Suddenly two pieces are perfectly made for each other, and they were printed individually, but with such precise, just detail that they fit perfectly. It's just a matter of time before it's printing limbs, before it's printing circuits, before it's printing entire ecosystems to the point where we have just like 3D printed an entire small planet even.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, that's the thing is all you got to do is it's, you know, there's some things that you need. Okay. So one of the things that you need is the ability to have some kind of matter, a lot of matter that you could use as your substrate, or what would you call it? Your precursor.
That's a good word, substrate.
Your substrate to create the various components. And then you need the technology to, almost need like a little mini chemical factory or something. But the ideal place to do these experiments is obviously the moon. We get these devices up on the moon. You build some kind of, I don't know, some kind of habitat or geranium up there, some kind of place where the initial experiments can happen. And all the matter that's on the moon, if you could make that a precursor material to 3D print structures, androids, whatever it is, you've colonized the moon. Not in the way we thought the moon would be colonized, but with androids, which are being controlled by us. So, yeah, we're talking about colonizing other planets.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to happen. I mean, we have to have the technology, you know, within the next couple years, we're going to have enough technology that we're going to have something on the moon. We'd be fools not to be taking advantage of that. Obviously, Mars is just a hop, skip, and a jump away. And then, you know, they're finding planets that are very Earth-like, not even 16 light years away. So we need to find that technology to travel at light speed. And then in 20 years, we can have a colony on another planet and possibly where we could breathe their atmosphere. So, yeah, the technology is going to take us there into space where we were destined to go.
This is, to me, what's really interesting about this is if you look at the model of most video games, you start off with some kind of character, and over the course of the video game, the character begins to gain special abilities that sort of press reset on the novelty of the game. I'll never forget the first time I got a flying mount in World of Warcraft. You ever play World of Warcraft?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know that moment when you're no longer having to get a taxi on a bat or whatever, but you're flying above. Sorry for those of you who are not video game nerds, but you should be. You're missing out. But that moment you rise up above Ogrimmar, you know, you can fly, and suddenly the game has reset itself. It's a whole new game. And so many other games are like that. You gain these special abilities. You get the ability to, you know, in Borderlands, suddenly you're able to like ride around in a vehicle, or, you know, you name it. There's so many different games where suddenly you get this new ability. So it's interesting to me that what we're talking about here really does mimic the pattern of a video game. Which is that here you are, the subjective you, the personal you, existing in whatever meat body you've been forced to inhabit for your entire life by whatever genetic roll of the dice made you who you are. And what we're looking at here is in a couple of years, you're going to have the ability potentially to go into other alternate dimensions. And then a few years down the road from there, after AI starts working on this problem of time travel, interstellar travel, there is this weird chance. Let's say it's 1 in 50 million, but still a weird chance that in your lifetime, you might teleport to some other alien world. And that's just like what would happen in a video game, which leads us back to the idea that's called simulation theory, which is that we might really be in some kind of super advanced alien game.
If that's true, then I'm very pleased with the outcome that has been given to me. My simulation has put me in a good position to be part of this emerging technology. You know, just similar to your comparison to video games, technology has the ability to change lives in so many ways. And virtual reality has changed my life. It has changed my life's direction. It has given me a new purpose, a reason to get up every day and to do my podcast and to talk to you and have these moments where you feel good about what you are doing, evangelizing virtual reality. So if this is a simulation, then I'm very pleased with the outcome of mine.
Well, and wouldn't, I mean, yeah, you're, what a cool way for the video game to transition or for you to level up is that you know, it's like if you were to read the back of the box, it's like start out as a limited, you know, meat thing on a planet in the middle of a void. And, you know, over the course of the game, you will experience what it's like to usher in a new alien intelligence called artificial intelligence that will pave the way for you to travel through the universe infinitely. That's such a cool game.
It is absolutely a cool game. And it is a lot of fun also to know that, you know, just like in a video game, there are NPCs. There are artificial intelligent people wandering around. They're just game players. They're not real people. They're just wandering around because they need to give you somebody to interact with. And right now, the rest of the world who is not familiar with the VR renaissance that's coming, those are the NPCs. And the VR may be able to give them an opportunity to wake up and become self-aware and then be part of the game for real, as opposed to just being there just for my own benefit.
Do you think this is the age of Aquarius that all the new agers and hippies were talking about? They just didn't know it would happen like this.
I guess so. I mean, it's very possible. A lot of times when people are visionaries, they don't exactly know the medium with which their vision is going to be delivered. And so what you end up with is, you know, Nostradamus or, you know, any of these astrologers that are out there or horoscopes. Now, the horoscope tells me I'm going to have a good day today. Well, why? Is it because I'm going to win the lottery or is it because I'm going to find a nickel on the sidewalk on my way to work? Both of those are very good possible representations of that vision. So it's very possible that VR is this delivery method for which we will receive this Age of Aquarius. I like that. That's a good representation.
It's such a beautiful and optimistic worldview that you have. And have you noticed that your techno-optimism is upsetting to some people who would prefer to live in a world that is crumbling into hell?
I have always been an optimist, and it does follow through into my VR evangelism. And yes, there are folks close to me who are skeptical, and it's okay because they're going to be skeptics, and they don't want to believe that this is anything more than just a video game accessory. And I don't let them bother me, you know. Then again, there are those folks who believe that this is going to be the Antichrist. This is going to be the thing that drags the world down into this dystopian oblivion, like the movie Surrogates, where people don't want to leave their house anymore, and they just live through a virtual interface. There are those folks as well. I say to all of them, that's fine. I'll just be there to prove you wrong when it does come out and it works exactly the way I said it was going to.
This is a very common pattern in history with any new emergent technology. There's always a group of people that feels terror over it. I certainly have explored in my mind and on other podcasts the dystopian aspect of this thing, which I guess is this, if you haven't really, really thought it through, then what you see is this kind of insular, heroin-like world where people in the flickering darkness of their there's a great painting, I'm sure you've seen it, of the kind of emaciated kid in the dirty apartment wearing VR
yes.
goggles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that sort of sums the whole thing up. Just VR addicts lost in a maze of sense gratification who are no longer experiencing the beauty of Mother Earth. And these people haven't been to Servios. They haven't gotten to experience what it's like to not just, they don't understand that there's a whole physical component to VR, and that actually what's going to end up happening with this is people are going to start getting really good at stuff. They're going to get really good at like playing piano, shooting guns, physical activity. All these things are, it's not that people aren't going to be moving wearing this stuff. That's one of the amazing things about VR is that it'll actually incorporates the movement of your body, which no video games and TV obviously can't do.
Yeah, the Servios guys are fantastic, and they are true visionaries when it comes to the virtual reality movement, and they really do fully understand what needs to happen for this to be a real, true occurrence in the history of mankind. They know that you have to have all of your senses be fulfilled in this experience. And so when it comes down to it, when you put on their gear and you're standing in their little stadium, their stage, and they give you these controllers, and you just have the ability to control the environment, experience the environment in multiple levels, it really truly makes you appreciate this future technology and where it's going to take us.
Do you think that the homes in the near future are going to actually have VR rooms built into the house?
Absolutely. I mean, I do. It's going to have to be a necessity. I mean, if you look at it right now, there are children who are sitting 10 foot away from their television, and they have a controller in their hand and their gaze fixed upon their 46-inch LCD TV on the wall, and they are just immersed, and everything
yes.
around them is completely gone. And all you have to do is take that exact same experience and make it VR, and you're not losing anything. You're gaining future technology.
And you tell people there's going to be VR rooms in houses, and they're like, whatever, I'm not going to have a fucking VR room. It's like, well, you've got a TV room. That's common. Like, most homes have a goddamn TV room. No one blinks at that. But prior to the existence of the TV, if you told somebody there's going to be special rooms in homes where it's not a fireplace but a glowing rectangular hypnotic screen with couches arranged and speakers arranged, they would be like, what? No, I would never build a room like that in my house. What would a VR room look like? What does your VR room look like?
A VR room looks like, well, there's two ways that you could look at this. You could look at what the ultimate is, and you can look at what the practical is. So the practical is, you don't even necessarily have to have a screen, but if you do, it's out of the way. You have a high-end computer running the technology. You have your headset with the wires hanging from the ceiling, or a wireless answer.
Yes.
You have seats for your friends who can be involved off to the wall. You've got a lot of room to move around. I mean, that's going to be the key, is that you have a lot of empty space to move around, and you have the ability to protect yourself from potentially, you know, taking a nosedive through a pane glass window or something.
Yeah, they're going to be padded. The rooms have got to be padded. They're going to have to
absolutely.
Have some kind of nerfed padding. And, you know, well, yeah, the like the people watching you experience the VR, that's going to be a big part of it too. But, you know, when I did Servios, my girlfriend ended up slamming her hand into a desk just because you forget so quickly that you're in that you're in a room. And you just think that you're in a, you know, the place that the virtual reality is projecting into your mind. So, yeah, these rooms have got to be padded, little padded rooms.
Yeah, and it doesn't take long for you to get so immersed in these worlds that you forget that if I'm swinging my hand with a baseball bat or a hatchet full speed at something in a fake space, that who knows what that's actually going to hit. I mean, I could have very easily punched somebody's lights out while playing this game at Servios and not having thought anything of it.
Not even.
Because I'm so involved in this game.
Do you foresee the one we've gotten, you know, like earbuds are virtual reality for your ears. And the TV is a kind of virtual reality that you're being pulled into. But the one thing that they haven't been able to digitize is smell. Do you know anything about this? Is there any kind of like smell technology on the horizon?
You know, there has been some forays into that field. People have attempted to do different things. I even saw one piece of technology that had an assortment of like 300 different scents that could be blasted at you, at your face, to give you a sensation of you're smelling something. I honestly don't know if that is as important as all of the other senses. So I think smell might need to come, but maybe later down the road.
You know, man, I have to disagree with you there. I think that we just haven't, because it's something so crazy to imagine how you're going to have a scent dispersal system that can like reproduce smells. But just imagine playing Call of Duty, for example, and smelling the charred flesh of the people you just blew up. Like, imagine playing, whatever the next World of Warcraft is going to be, and standing in some field and smelling flowers, smelling the, like, you know, the feeling that... I think that is a really important thing. People just don't know how to do it, so we, like, just get used to not being able to smell anything. But to understand how important smell is, the next time you find yourself out in a forest or anywhere in nature... just, clamp your nose shut for a little while.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely has to happen. I just don't think that the people who are developing this technology are looking at it as a priority. I mean, maybe we need to petition these companies to make sure that they attack this as well and move it up on their priority list just a bit. But I think one of the pieces that people are really focusing on right now that is important is the control mechanisms with which you interact with these VR worlds. So the gloves or the controllers that track your body movement, those are important pieces right now that we need fully developed to go along with our head-mounted displays.
Yep, that's right. Eusebius has some kind of, I don't know what it's how it's doing what it does, but it's like it definitely seems like it's using some form of whatever the Kinect is doing, along with that weird thing on your head. I don't understand this stuff. You know, I'm purely an enthusiast. I'm not a technician, but yeah, that's a really important thing that we need. And then I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about haptic technology and anything that you might know about producing, like using wind or fans to create a sense of like defining spaces.
Haptics is very important because not only do you need to be able to manipulate the virtual world, but the virtual world has to be able to manipulate you back. And so there has to be, for every action, an equal and opposite reaction. And haptics is the technological answer to that. So you have to have, there are devices. There's a company called Tactical Haptics that has a reactive grip controller. And when you hold it in your hand, and one of my favorite demos that they have is a fishing game where you pull back and you whip your fishing rod out and your fishing lure goes out into the water and you can jerk that thing and wind it in and you feel it in your hand like a real fishing rod.
Wow.
And it is unbelievable. They have a slingshot where you pull back with one hand and you feel the tension as you're pulling that back, and the farther back you pull, the tighter it gets, and it's real and it feels sensational.
What are the materials that they're using? How are they pulling that off?
It is several servos that are moving things against your skin. So when you actually feel, if you take a rod in your hand and then you pull back on it with your other, you'll feel your skin stretch against it, against the material.
Wow.
And that's what they're doing. They're simulating that by moving these servos against your hand, and it's fantastic technology.
And everybody wants to know about this. Talk a little bit about where you see the future of pornography with this kind of technology.
Absolutely. And it's something that I'm sure that will surprise folks, because Reverend Kyle doesn't, you know, why would he talk? No, I'm a huge advocate of the porn in the VR world. I think it is an amazing thing. If you end up with a good video or a good experience and you do it in VR, you'll end up very, very happy. Is it a replacement for the real thing? Absolutely not. But there are pieces of technology out there that can simulate. You could take a fleshlight and attach it to a servo. You could very easily just have your partner be involved. That's something that I have experimented with, and having somebody mirroring what I'm seeing in the virtual world. And it's a fantastic, amazing experience.
Wow.
I recommend it to everyone.
So you have put on VR goggles. I have a Rift. And because I get motion sickness from the thing, I'm waiting for the new one. We can talk about that in a second, but I'm waiting for the new one. But so I could never really find any kind of good porn programs, and I definitely look for them. I couldn't find any kind of porn. Is there a newer new VR porn out there now?
No. Here's what you have to do. There's something very basic. It's a basic program that's been out for a long time. It's called VR Player, and it just plays a video in stereo onto your Rift. So it's a basic, simple video player. It just gives you the two images, and they're barrel distorted. Now, here is where you have to get creative. You have to go find that perfect POV shot porn.
Right.
You have to find the right one, the one that just gets it. And there are very few of them, but I have a nice assortment. I'll have to send you some links.
Please.
Yes. It's very important that if you're going to do this, you do it correctly.
Yes. We need a guide. You should have a guide up on your site about that. So you've put the goggles on, and then you've had your girlfriend or you've had a partner go through, like, mimic what was happening.
Yes. My wife was watching the screen, and she was simulating what I was watching.
Wow. Now, that's super cool. And you have an awesome wife. Congratulations on that.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
The next thing that's going to happen, though, when I think about porn, what I imagine is going to happen is, like, currently the way we film porn is, I have lights and a camera, and you film people that way. The next way they're going to start filming porn is using whatever the weird 3D camera things, you know, I don't know what those are, but those weird camera staffs that record 3D space. And then it seems like there's going to be an addition to that, which is that the guy in the porn, or the woman in the, probably the guy, is going to have something attached to his penis that is recording sensations on his penis, so that his cock is like, when he's going in and out, it's recording that, whatever that is. And then this haptic technology you were talking about, you could have something that you put on your penis, on your cock, that takes the place of an awesome wife. If you don't have an awesome wife who's going to do that, it will perfectly replicate the experience of this porn actor.
Yes, and that will happen, and that is being developed as we speak. So it's just a matter of time before you see that as well. And it's going to cause all sorts of amazing experiences and problems at the same time.
And you know, for example, what it's going to allow you to do is you will be able to record the sensations of making love to your girlfriend. In the same way some people shoot videos of themselves having sex, you're going to actually be able to record a sexual experience. And anytime you want to have that again with your girlfriend or wife or boyfriend, you're going to be able to experience that even after the breakup. And where it gets even stranger and more, and the problems like you're talking about, is when I was a kid, and I went to visit my dad after the divorce. When he went to work, the very first thing I would do is try to hunt down his porn collection. But in this case, what's going to happen is kids are going to stumble upon the recordings of their parents having sex, and they're actually going to feel what it's like to be their parents having sex. And that's fucked up.
That is some, like, wow. Yeah, no, I hadn't thought about it to that extreme, but yeah, that's some edible Oedipal type of stuff there.
Yeah, man, and it's going to get even weirder. Like, imagine five generations down the line. In the same way we have, like, old antique family pictures. You're going to be like, do you want to experience what it was like when your great-grandmother had sex with your great-grandfather?
I love this. This takes it to an absurd level that I hadn't thought about, and I love it. Because you're absolutely right. This is messed up beyond. But, you know, this is a plot line to a movie, actually. There was a movie from, like, the mid-80s. It was called Strange Days.
Great. It had a great soundtrack, didn't it? That was an amazing soundtrack.
That was it. They were selling the experiences of having sex with different women.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that's what it's going to be. You're going to get it's going to leak. It's going to be leaked into the new sex tape. It's not going to be watch Kardashian have sex. It's going to be feel what it's like to have sex with Kim Kardashian, or feel what it's like to be Kim Kardashian having sex. And that's going to be so wild to be able to experience that. And sex is a huge part of the human experience. So what we're talking about here is this, aside from the being able to replay sex, we're talking about massive digital orgies happening inside VR space live. It's not just that you're going to, once the technology exists to reproduce a sexual experience, obviously you're going to be able to stream one too.
I wonder, because now, since we're delving into this area, what would it cost to purchase the sensation to have sex with a Kardashian? Think of the economical aspects here. An entire industry could be created and empires built all around Kim Kardashian's vagina.
It's already happened, unfortunately. Well. But that's the other thing is, you know, the sexual cameras of the future are going to look like dildos. They're going to be, you know, phallic haptic recording devices that women can use, like webcam girls are going to be able to push into their vagina some kind of sensor technology that a guy will have a sheath on his cock and will actually experience having virtual sex with her in real time. That's the prostitution of the future. You know, a lot of people are talking about people are going to lease androids that are going to be sexual partners and workers for them. But I think before that happens, this other thing's going to happen, which is that some kind of fleshlight that haptically simulates the sensation of having sex in real time with people, with cam girls. That's going to happen.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And actually, it's going to be quite interesting.
It's going to be quite interesting, and it's going to create all kinds of fascinating problems. But again, you know, that's just one little thing. It's like, the sex is a huge thing. A lot of money is going to go into these technologies. But what about other non-sexual stuff? Like, what does it feel like to shake hands with the president? You know, that kind of stuff. Just like gloves that you can wear that record the haptic technology, it records sensation. You know, that's what we're looking at, because VR, to produce these digital experiences, the recording devices of the future are not just going to be cameras. They're going to be sensation recorders, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is all truth. I mean, we're going to see these things. They sound ridiculous now, but they're not. They're going to exist in reality in the next year or two, or three maybe. But yes, you're going to have all of these different experiences. I was very pleased. I had a chance to go meet. There's a group of guys out in L.A. The company's called Kite and Lightning. And they had a technology at their office that blew my mind. It was this huge jungle gym looking device. It looked like something out of like a horror movie, or like some sort of weird like sexual dungeon torture chamber. And there was a bed on it, and you laid down in it. And they put a Rift on me and these headsets, and I was transported out into space. And they had a fan that blew down on you. And I'm traveling through this like Arctic world and I could feel it. It was snowing in this digital world. I could feel the motion, the movements, and the sound. And there were these like vibrations coming out underneath the table, and they had these like motors that were shaking, and the fan blowing on me. I actually felt like I was in this like cold world, and those sensations were easily created now. Imagine what they'll be able to do with technology a year from now.
Fuck! Beds of the future are not going to be beds. Beds of the future are going to be some kind of sensory, some kind of holodeck. That makes so much sense. They're going to have beds that you lay down on, and as you're going to sleep, it's like, where do you want to sleep? Experience what it, fall asleep in a forest, or fall asleep in a volcano, just depending on what it is you want to experience. I mean, the problem right now is it's probably hard to sleep with a goddamn giant plastic blindfold on, which is what the Rift is, but that clearly that's going to shrink down.
Well, yeah, and imagine the invalid And the Alzheimer's, the people who are affected by all these just debilitating diseases, and they are laying in a bed and they cannot experience the world, we can suddenly give them this sensation of living again.
Oh, I know, man. Our kids in children's hospitals. Oh, my God. So many wonderful things that are going to be done with this stuff. And air travel. You know, flying in planes, their planes are going to have these VR goggles that you put on. And, you know, I imagine they're going to remove the exterior of the plane. So you're just floating in the sky real time.
It's a funny, I have a funny story about that. I actually flew out to L.A. A month or so ago. And I actually had brought a portable device, an Android-based, the Durovis Dive is an Android-based VR experience. And so I put it on my head and I'm watching a movie in VR, and the guy sitting in the plane next to me, he goes, "What in the hell are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, no, don't worry, man. It's VR. It takes me into another world." And I ended up doing like an hour and a half demo to all of the people sitting around me in the plane. And I'm thinking to myself, even at 30,000 feet, here I am evangelizing and showing everyone the future.
It's so cool. And the tyranny of experience, it's like the tyranny of this, the idea that we as human beings are finally innovating a way to free ourselves from the tyranny of reality, which forces itself upon us just as it is. You know, the idea that suddenly we're going to free ourselves from, you're not going to be in a plane anymore. You're not going to be sitting, staring around in some boring, gross plane, watching people with hangovers puke into bags. You're going to be flying through the air with no one around you, just you alone. That is beautiful, man. I find that to be so beautiful. Why do you think people, or some people, are so against or terrified of, or just so generally dismissive of this technology?
Fear. Pure fear. I really truly believe that people just fear technology, especially when it does something they've never seen before. Then there's another group of people who also are just purely skeptical of everything. Oh, we've seen that before. We've seen that before. That's not new, and it's not going to work. And they'll just dismiss it. But those are the people who come back after they see the success. And they see the masses of consumers just dumping their money out down the drain to get this technology. Those people come back, but there will always be that group that just are afraid. They fear change, and I don't think there's anything you can do to get through to those folks.
Do you? How far away do you? How long is it before there is illegal virtual reality experiences that are legislated?
I think that'll happen within a year, possibly 18 months. But I have a feeling that once consumer VR hits the world and it starts being purchased, you're going to see children who spend all their time in it, or somebody does something very, very stupid while wearing this. An irresponsible adult does something very stupid, like try to drive with one.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's litigation and then regulation and then just absolute chaos. A lot of it, I'm going to have to blame a lot of this when it does occur. I'm just going to foreshadow here. I have a feeling that mainstream media is going to be virtual reality's biggest enemy.
Mm.
They are going to run with every negative thing that they can find about this new technology, and it's going to be a detriment to the future.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That is what's going to happen because, you know, mainstream media is already, or at least TV, is just a old, crumbling, dying, disgusting behemoth. It's like TV right now reminds me of when the whales wash up on the beach and just start rotting. It's just this gross, rotting, stupid thing. And yeah, they're not going to like the fact that this new incredible way of absorbing content happens. Do you think that, I think what the problem is going to be, one of the more we begin to, with greater and greater precision, duplicate reality, and the more difficult it becomes to discern the rift dimension from this dimension, that's where the problems are going to come. And it feels like there's going to have to be the beginning legislation might be that in really realistic VR games or VR experiences, there has to always be some glowing thing on the screen showing you that you're in a virtual world and not the real world. You know, something that always reminds you, you are not in the real world right now. You're in virtual space, because there will be a court case where somebody says, I didn't know that I thought I was in a video game when I strangled my wife.
Yeah, I unfortunately, yes, that is a future newsreel. There's nothing we can do about it. You know, it just like in terms of addiction, you can relate it to addiction. Addiction is not the fault of the substance. Addiction is the fault of the person consuming the substance not being able to handle themselves.
Right.
And so you cannot blame the addiction, the substance is not responsible for the addiction. So when it comes to VR, when somebody says, oops, I didn't know that I was not in VR, I thought it was okay to kill her because I thought it was a video game, that is that person's fault for not understanding the difference.
Well, I thought Sorry.
No, that's basically my point.
Well, I thought of a, you know, malicious game that scans your house. You know, that's the other thing that happens is it's like, this is, I don't know when this is going to happen. This is my prediction of what happens in the future, which is that you buy these little mini like camera drones or scanning drones, and you bring them into your house, and you release these scanning drones, and the scanning drones fly through your house, recording your entire house and replicating that. So that you could be in your walk through your house with your VR goggles on and be in VR space. So the game is you put the VR goggles on, and the very first part of the game is you take the VR goggles off and you're still in the house that was created by the swarm, by the drones. You know what I'm saying? So that the game tricks you into thinking that you're not playing the game anymore.
Well, absolutely. And so what we have to do is we have to make sure that people are responsible enough with their own technology to have some sort of safe word or something to let themselves know that they are not still in the virtual world. It's going to be a little while before the technology is so perfect that we get to that point where people can't tell the difference between the two. But
it's a neural prosthesis, because as long as the reminder is you touch your face and you're going to feel this fucking thing on your head. No, even if it is small goggles, you'll feel them. Where it gets weird is when it's an implant or some kind of like sound, something that like uses vibrations to stimulate your neocortex to create duplicate realities inside your brain. That's where you can get trapped in a virtual world. And that's where you're in the virtual. It's so fun to think about this game, though, where as part of the game, you go to a psychologist and you're like, I know I'm in a video game. And the psychologist in the game is like, you're just not. You've gone insane. You know, there's no way out after that. You're in a Philip K. Dick novel after that, because even if, you know, finally the game gets deactivated or whatever, you're still never going to trust the reality that you're in.
I am totally going to go, and once we're done talking, and start writing a game that does exactly that.
Please
because
do.
Because that is just, you know, you go to a doctor, and the doctor says, no, this is real. This is real life.
Yeah.
And you just try. The whole point of the game is to convince you that the virtual world is real. That's dangerous.
Yeah, the idea is it turns this dimension inside out. And you know, when I was at Servios and I took the thing off and I went out back to talk to the guys, I was like, "Holy fucking shit, man. Like, I'm not sure this is real." There's a second where your brain is like, "Wait a minute. If that's not real, this thing that I just experienced and just automatically believed was real, are you telling me this is real? Now I have to just believe this is real?" So a game that fans the flames of that suspicion so that when you pull the thing off, you know, that you aren't quite sure that you've pulled the thing off. That's got to be part of the game, is the character in the game is always taking the goggles off. You put the game on, the character, when you put the goggles on, the character in the game takes his goggles off. And you know, some kind of virtual wife says to you, why are you always playing that stupid game? You know,
you'll appreciate this. There's a group of guys who are developing a piece of software called Rift Max Theater. And Rift Max Theater has become this haven of different virtual shows. I actually hosted a virtual talk show, kind of like a late night type of thing there. We do stand-up comedy. We do karaoke cool. on Thursday nights. And we do all of this virtually, and we have avatars. We go meet each other. I have spent, on one occasion, 6.5 hours with an Oculus Rift and headphones on, in the Rift Max Theater software and interacting with folks from all around the planet. And I'll tell you what, when I took those things off finally, there was about a good half hour where I seriously wasn't sure where I was.
Yeah, that thing that you just described, there will be a name for that. We don't have a name for that feeling, but that is a new feeling for the humans to have. And I don't know what that is. It's some kind of like jet lag, virtual jet lag or something, where your mind can't accept the fact that you're in a completely different universe when you were, or a different kind of dimension when you spent so much time in one. So yeah, man, that's going to be an interesting challenge topic of study or subject for psychologists to explore. And then, the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, I know we've gone over an hour, but this is so fun to talk to you about this stuff, Reverend Carr, is the drugs, psychedelics and the various drugs that combine with this, with virtual reality. Don't you foresee certain drugs emerging, tryptamines or psychedelics that are specially tailored to go along with a virtual experience?
I think that there is definitely room for that. You know, if folks choose to enhance their real life experiences with whatever type of drugs that they choose, that's fantastic. I feel like that should translate very well into the virtual world. I have seen things in the virtual world, and I have said to myself, wow, this would be amazing on whatever type of enhancement drug. So yeah, it's definitely going to translate well, and I think that it's going to open up some new horizons for a lot of people.
It's just this device that you would have, and I don't know how the drug would be administered to you, but some kind of advice where, in the same way that the game is metering out your experience of sound and sight, it would also be metering out like little drops of some kind of caffeine-like substance or some kind of like sedative or something. You know what I mean?
So that
you're not just experiencing fans blowing on you. You're not just experiencing some chemical concoction to duplicate smell. You're not just experiencing the haptic reality of feeling things push against you, but also you're experiencing shifts in your actual neural state by some kind of induction that's happening using a drug and a device that can pump it into you according to whatever's happening in the game.
So, some of the most inventive pieces of technology that I have seen in my days have come from folks who are trying to find a new way to administer some sort of recreational drug. I've seen novelty and ingenuity at its greatest as a result of trying to consume whatever type of mind-altering substances they choose. And so, yes, this is definitely going to be a reality, something that occurs where you have people who want to take a really, really good experience of virtual reality and then kick it up to 11 and really have something to help them be even more immersed.
Well, yeah, that's it. It's that's what it is. It's like more and more and more immersion. That's what we want. That's the idea, is deeper and deeper levels of immersion. And the final step, the ultimate step, is going to be a way to digitally record a person's feeling states, literally their emotional and states and their thought patterns, so that in the virtual state, as whatever avatar that you're playing, you don't just experience having the shell of the thing around you, but imagine playing Wolfenstein and hearing the thoughts of the character that you're inside your own head. You know, it's this technological, GF 2045, they were talking about neural prosthesis that they put in, I think they said your hippocampus or something, that records thoughts and memories. Isn't that the final step of this? This is where shit really, really goes off the deep end, is where when you go into these virtual worlds and you assume your World of Warcraft character in 2045, you actually assume their memories as well.
Yeah, that's it. That is the final frontier. Absolutely.
Man, it is such a blast talking to you. You are such an expert in this stuff, and I think people are going to want to have chats with you and connect with you. How can people find you out there?
It's very easy. You can go and find me on the website roadtovr.com. I'm part of the Road to VR team. Road to VR is the best place to go for all of your virtual reality news. I actually do a podcast, the Rev VR podcast. I do it weekly, mostly. And it's available on iTunes and on Stitcher, so you can find me there. I'm also on Twitter under Reverend KJR. You can also find a lot of this information, a lot of the things that I spend quite a bit of time in the Oculus subreddit, which is where a lot of the VR community resides. I'd also like to encourage everyone, if you are interested in becoming part of this VR community, that you can actually go and join our chats. There are several chat programs available, vrchat.net, or you can go to riftmax.com and download the application and join us for a chat virtually. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would like to do that. After we stop recording, I'd like to talk to you about doing that, because I do have a Rift. Can you assure the people listening right now, is there any way that you can prove that we are not in some kind of super advanced simulation right now and you're just the voice of the machine?
No, I can't. And that's what's wonderful about this.
Thank you so much, Reverend Kyle. Hare Krishna. Everybody, definitely follow him on Twitter. And I'm going to talk to him now about figuring out a way to go into this Rift Max space. So maybe we can figure out a Duncan Trussell Family Hour meetup with Reverend Kyle once this thing gets released, so we can all hang out in virtual space together. Those of you who have an
thanks
Oculus
for listening,
Rift.
Everybody. And please go check out Reverend Kyle's website. Go to DuncanTrussell.com. Check out all the new dates. Give us a nice rating on iTunes. And most importantly, thanks to NatureBox.com for sponsoring this episode. Go to NatureBox.com/FamilyHour and you'll get 50% off your first order. NatureBox.com/FamilyHour. And after you do that, don't kill any kids. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you next week. I love you. Goodbye. You're listening to Neil Young. This is from his album Decade. It's called I Am a Child.
I am a child. I last a while. You can't conceive of the pleasure in my smile. You hold my hand, rough up my hair. It's lots of fun to have you there. I gave to you, now you give to me. I'd like to know what you've learned. The sky is blue and so is the sea. What is the color when black is burned? What is the color? You are a man. You understand. You pick me up and you lay me down again. You make the rules. You say what's fair. It's lots of fun to have you there. I gave to you, now you give to me. I'd like to know what you've learned. The sky is blue and so is the sea. What is the color when black is burned? What is the color? You can't conceive of the pleasure in my smile.